Penguin Random House Audio presents The Deadline Clock by Jeffrey Deaver. Read for you by Kaleo Griffith.
I couldn't see him. The hood was over my head. But I could hear. He said, "It's time. It won't hurt." Like he was talking to a neighbor about the weather. And he got me around the neck. A chokehold, I guess it was. And I was zip-tied, so I couldn't fight back. I tried, but I couldn't. And he just started the pressure, and things started to go black, just like in a few seconds. And I knew I was dead.
Coulter Shaw had come to the beautiful and gritty seaport town of West Bay, Maine, because in 5 hours and a handful of minutes, a woman was going to die. His Winnebago in a campground on the outskirts, his motorcycle locked to a parking meter on the street below, Shaw was presently in the office of the West Bay Police Department's chief of detectives. He was, at the moment, alone and looking through the glass wall into the detective pen, in which were 8 or so uniformed or plain-clothed men and women. The windows comprising the walls of the office were spotless. Shaw smelled vinegar and had an early memory of his mother using vinegar in newspapers to clean panes, when there were newspapers. Shaw supposed paper towels worked too. His focus was on a man of about 40, sitting in a swivel office chair in the middle of the pen, the center of the clustered officers. He resembled any other businessman with his trim dark hair, slight roll of belly wrapped in a blue dress shirt, brown loafers with tassels. His slacks were black. His name was Ronald Cole, and the hollow look in his eyes and compulsive tapping of one foot then the other was because his wife, Ellie, was the woman with a limited future. 2 of the officers, a man in a uniform and a woman in a gray suit, were asking Cole questions. The others were either on phones or looking at computer screens or at keyboards they pecked slowly. Coulter Shaw himself was similar in appearance to the male officers of his age. 30s, athletic, trim, short hair, blonde in his case, lying close to his head. One difference? They didn't have a facial scar, or at least any Shaw could see from this distance. He was in black jeans, black Echo shoes, and a dark gray collared shirt. His leather jacket was folded, and sitting atop his black motorcycle helmet and backpack, both on the floor beside him. One of the men left the crew around Cole and made his way through the pen to the office where Shaw sat. It was a white man, huge, with a crew cut. Shaw would have placed a sizable bet that his younger days, he was late 40s now, involved football. His position, tackle, of course. His navy suit jacket and slacks were close in shade, but did not quite pair. He'd have trouble finding clothes that size.
"Mr. Shaw?"
"Lloyd Oberon." The man settled into a chair that creaked under his weight. They shook hands.
"Detective, I'm Coulter. And Lloyd's fine."
He opened his red eyes wide, then closed them, rubbed with knuckles like a sleepy child.
"All this rigmarole over titles. Sold a house once. The lawyer wanted to be called Esquire Kepler. Can you imagine? So, you're in the reward business."
He made it sound like Shaw's livelihood was a profession, complete with conferences and pension plans. Shaw didn't elaborate on the MO of his work, just nodded. "An associate saw the notice the city posted online. I was in New Hampshire. I drove up." The offer was brief. $25K for information leading to the rescue of Ellie Cole and the arrest of her kidnapper. Those experienced at offering rewards always attach conditions. In this case, no cash unless the victim was rescued and the perp collared. Shaw didn't care. For him, it was never about the money. There was another word in the announcement, urgent, in red. The reason for this was made clear by Teddy Bruin, the man who had emailed the announcement. Teddy had done some digging into the case. The kidnapper would murder Ellie if he didn't receive the ransom within 12 hours of his call, which had been at 8 o'clock that morning. This wasn't a bluff. He'd done the same thing last month, and the victim had come within seconds of dying. The time was now 2:38 p.m.
"After you called," Oberon continued, "I ran your name, came up clean, and your concealed permits are in order." "You're not..."
A frown. "No, my weapons and my bike." The state of Maine was generous on the subject of residents and non-residents carrying weapons, concealed or open. On the front door of the government complex here, though, was a prominent sign prohibiting guns inside.
"You've been in the news some."
This was true. Most of it was positive.
"To be honest, sir, Coulter, I would not normally do this, bring on somebody outside. I got some flack from up above. The commissioner was not side-splitting happy when I told him this wasn't about tips. You'd be helping the investigation. Didn't sit well. The mayor either. But there's precedent."
He nodded toward an office whose door was labeled Dispatch.
"Our 911 girl's a civilian, and we farm out crime scene work and trackers. We can't afford hounds. You wouldn't believe what they cost.
Ooh-wee.
Anyway, I see it. We don't have a choice. Kidnapper's not negotiating. Either we pay, or she's gone."
The man massaged those ruddy eyes with massive knuckles once again.
"So, long as you stay a football field away from tactical, we'll take your help. But I want information, and only information, that I act on. You don't."
Shaw said, "I'm not into citizens' arrests." This was accurate, though not a whole disclaimer, and if Oberon pressed, Shaw might admit that he carried zip ties in his pocket, and from time to time, used them.
"Word of warning, I can't stop you from carrying. It's your right. But I do not want any weapons leaving holsters. No interest in trading slugs myself."
The detective looked out the window at Ronald Cole.
"Man, oh man, what a mess this is. I thought after the first kidnapping he'd just go away, move to another city, another country."
The detective's mobile rang and he took the call. His voice dropped and softened. It was a personal call. A picture on the spotless credenza depicted the detective beside a woman his age, Jenny, presumably, and in front of them, a couple in their 20s with a young boy. The child was pale and thin. He disconnected, grimaced, and forced his attention back to Shaw.
"I've got to get back to it. I'm going to set you up with one of my men. He's good. He'll brief you."
Shaw asked. "Anyone else try to claim the reward?"
"Got a couple of calls. Clear they didn't know anything. Just hoping for a piece of the pie. One said he was a financial advisor. He'd be happy to help with any funds transfers. I told them obstruction of justice is a felony and I was tracing their number. Disconnected so fast, I hope they broke a finger."
He rose, and together they walked out of his office.
"Let's go meet your partner."
They moved through the pen proper. The office was typical of the scores that Shaw had been in, pursuing rewards offered by police and prison officials. The business end of enforcing laws was little different from that of an insurance agency or a wholesale kitchen goods distributor. Functional. Cubicles with half walls, topped by frosted glass, desks, chairs, low-end computers and copiers, floors that needed tiling, walls, painting, and of course, paper, paper, paper. One difference from Allstate or...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?